And she does really well into it. My strategy is I've got a bunch of play support bonus actions and then move six with flight. I'm just going to flip my markers, get in your face in your own quadrant early on, and then just, like, you'll obliterate my crew, but you didn't get across the table. You didn't score any points, and I got, most of my points. I got two or three from the scheme and hopefully two to three from the strategy.
Howdy, friends. Craig here. We've got another Path to Podium for Malifaux. This is for a tournament that occurred in Charlotte, North Carolina, late last year. Obviously, this is before the quarantine as well as before Gaining Grounds 1. It's interesting to see what crews they brought, why they brought those crews, and some of the key moments that led to them making it to the top three in that event. At the very end, we have a really interesting discussion talking about the different strategies and schemes that are in Gaining Ground Zero. They make some predictions and kind of a wish list of things they would like to see in Gaining Grounds 1, and it's kind of neat to hear what's discussed based off of what we knew ended up happening. Enjoy.
Playing a tabletop strategy game allows you to unplug and test your skills against friends. Every week, Third Floor Wars delivers useful strategies, discussions, battle reports, and reviews to tabletop games like Malifaux. If you want to get better at the games you already play, or discover the games other people are playing, you are in the right place. Craig and Ray welcome you to the Third Floor and the Tabletop Talk Broadcast.
Craig here on the Third Floor. Today we have the three players that made the podium in the 14-player, three-round event in Charlotte, North Carolina. The henchman that runs it, Chris Blues, good friend of mine. He's the local hench there in Charlotte, and I think one of the guys that's put a lot of effort into M3E. He ran the event, and our guests are Oliver Borden, Daniel Phillips, and Nick Alanis. Now, Oliver comes out of the Capital City Conference, and he placed second in the Nova GT. And if you listen to the Path to Podium for Nova, you got a chance to hear Oliver. And he's been on the show a few times now. Probably one of my favorite episodes that Oliver was on is he did a Building a Meta from Scratch episode, which I'll have linked in the show notes for you. He placed first in the event playing Bayou. So, Oliver, welcome back to the Third Floor.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, man. So today, and I don't know how we're going to release these and what order they'll be released, but you and I are recording twice today. We're recording this, and then we're doing the Ma Tucka deep dive. Just want to find out what you've been playing in general over the last month or so.
Yeah, so mostly I've been playing Somer and Ma with, like, random dive-ins to Neverborn stuff when my community asked me to stop playing Bayou. Played Titania a couple times because I'm painting one. But yeah, mostly just sticking with the broken stuff.
Yep. All right, cool. So some of you might recognize our second guest, Daniel. He plays out of the Carolinas Conference. He was the Pandora player on our one of our recent Battleground broadcast live videos, which is worth watching, and I'll have linked in the show notes. It's on our YouTube channel. Technically, his first appearance here on the pod, but he's been to the Third Floor, like literally been on the Third Floor a few times. So, Daniel, welcome back to the Third Floor.
Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you, man. Want to kind of find out from you what Neverborn Masters you've been having the most success with lately.
Dreaver is kind of my bread and butter. I would say other than that, it's kind of a hodgepodge of things with the exception of Nekoma. That's also just a kind of an easy crew to run and very effective and kind of a crutch if I'm not sure what I'm going up against and I just want something simple and effective and straightforward. That's kind of, I go with Nekoma.
So we're not seeing a whole lot of Nekoma talk right now. Do you think that's just because we don't have the totem in the crew box?
That's part of the reason. A lot of those Nephilim models are from first edition and they're very hard to find. I usually have to borrow one or proxy.
Yeah.
Anytime I play her, which is, an inherent obstacle to, getting her out there more. But I there's also a better options in Neverborn with Dreamer and Zoraida. She's good at what she does, but it's kind of a niche pick and it's kind of a comfort pick for me.
Yeah. So it's a situation where she just gets beat out in every pool by somebody else.
Not always, but for the most part, yeah.
Gotcha.
Opportunity cost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is a big part of that. And it's why I'm glad I don't develop this game, because to have seven, eight, nine masters in a faction and be able to.
Opportunity cost is a huge issue.
Yeah. Right, I mean, it's hard to come up with a spot for each one of them. All right, our last guest is Nick, who also plays out of the Capital City Conference. And Nick, you played top table against Cody Hyatt in the recent North Carolina Grand Tournament this year, and you ended up finishing fourth in that event. He was also one of the guests for our Building a Meta from Scratch episode that I mentioned that Oliver was on. And you brought Neverborn to this event. So, Nick, welcome back to the third floor.
Yeah. It's great to be here again.
So, Nick, you did not play Neverborn at the NCGT. You played Outcast, right?
I actually played 10 Thunders.
All right, I'm sorry, 10 Thunders. Yeah, I get the broken factions mixed up.
Yeah.
So talk to me about the transition to Neverborn for this event.
Oh, so for this event, like, one of our friends got this, like, old lot of Neverborn models from first edition. And, like, he gave me this box. And there could have been a dead rat in it. I don't know. I like opened it up and just looked through his models while we were driving on the way to the event. I was like, oh, I'll just play Dreamer. You have all the Dreamer stuff, all the minions. So I'll just play that this time.
So are you telling me that this tournament was the first time you've ever played Dreamer?
First time I put it on the table. I played a couple times in Vassal.
Oh, okay.
With himself, mind you.
Just to test it, yeah.
The Cody method.
I've tested it, yeah. But, like, yeah, it's the first, like, actual on-the-table, put models, like, on the table doing stuff.
So, and I don't want to go too far into it, but what do you think is kind of the difficulty level, in your opinion, of Dreamer? So having run him for the first time, you know, on the table at an event, do you think he's a plug and play, or do you think it takes a good player to do well with him?
Both. Cause like I think if the player playing Dreamer plays him perfectly and you manage to make it through all five rounds or all five turns of a game, it's like almost impossible to beat him.
Yeah.
But like if the player makes mistakes, there's like chances to actually take advantage of it. Like Daniel was able to do that in our round two game because I was just a dingus and messed up a bunch. So.
Well, yeah, you had a rough time that one.
Well, and we're going to obviously talk about that round, but it's you know, tough on you, Nick, to go against an extremely experienced Neverborn player, which Daniel is. So we'll talk about that when we talk about round two. So, Oliver, you've been to a couple events. What did you think of the Charlotte event in general, the venue?
Yeah, super cool. The venue was really cool. That store was awesome. They have like a fine Malifaux section because that's just like an issue with the logistics of the game. But they had some stuff that wasn't out elsewhere, so a couple of the guys picked up some stuff. The cool thing for me was they had like all these like random obscure pen and paper RPGs. So I just was like perusing those between rounds. But as for the community itself, that was like really cool. I mean, Blue's like a super cool guy. Yeah. I think I'd met him at one of the other Carolina events. But I know I've talked to him a million times online, but it was great to see like everybody again, basically in person. I always like traveling to the Carolinas.
Yeah. Well, and there was, four of you guys from the Capital City that came down, right?
Yeah. It was, me, Nick, John, and Matthew, John and Matthew, obviously being the two infamous people from a weird place who constantly start trolley fights on the internet. They're a part of our brand, I guess. I'm sorry, everybody. Just going to shout that out.
But you guys showed well. You guys took three of the top four spots.
Yeah. John got fourth, I want to say, because he doesn't know how to score points. So Nick beat him on breakers.
Yeah.
He's a very much, I won 6-5. Isn't that great? We're like, no, that sucks. What are you doing?
No, it was a good showing for you guys to travel out of town into, a competitive conference like ours and do well is pretty impressive. Daniel, what was your take on the event?
I go ahead and say I love that store. I really like the play surfaces. It's stand up. I stand up the whole time I play anyways, so having to lean over like a shorter table or whatever is kind of annoying. And they have the nice little table underneath, so even though you're shoulder to shoulder with the people next to you, you have that little shelf underneath you to put all your extra models and cards and everything else that you don't need.
The shelf was S tier.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah, no question. Yeah, the Meeple's great because they, and for those of you that have, obviously many of you have never been there, but they have what I call bar level tables. So it comes up, you know, to above your stomach or like mid chest, the tables themselves. And it's just so easy to stand and play. And that, I agree, Daniel, that shelf under is nice. It's also, this is going to sound funny, but it's also a clean store.
Oh yeah,
which
you're not wrong. Yeah,
unfortunately, for hobby stores, can be a rarity. So
troll caves,
yeah, exactly. All right, guys, what we're gonna do is we're gonna kind of cover several things. I'm gonna try to cover each of these rounds with you, and we're gonna focus on a few things. One, what crews did you pick and why? Who did you face, and was their pick something that influenced your builds? And then I want to find out from each of you for each round, what do you think were some of the key moments? Decision points that you guys made that, you know, led to you eventually making the podium itself. The idea is to give the listeners some insights for competitive play that hopefully that they can take some of the thoughts and processes that you guys had and translate it into their own play. So we're going to take a quick break. When we get back from this break, we're going to talk about round one. All right, guys, round one. Interesting pool. It's Wedge, Plant Explosives. The schemes were Outflank, Vendetta, Search the Ruins, Harness the Ley Line, and Hold Up Their Forces. Now, Oliver, you played against Jesse Watson. Jesse recently was on an episode where we did a deep dive into Lucius. He's also been on the live stream before. Great guy, especially to play against. One of the cleanest players I've ever come across. So you ended up beating Jesse 6-4. So let's first talk about your approach to the pool.
Yeah, so anytime I see Harness and Search in a pool, I'm going to take them because they're easy. I know a lot of people have started to contest that. I think that's still the same. I think it's the same it's always been. The reason I find those easy is they don't take my opponent to do.
Right.
I can ignore my opponent. I can be losing the whole game, and I can still score my points. Bayou is very much a giant paper bag of cockroaches, and once it pops, you just got to scurry. And I think there's very much play to that play style.
What keyword did you bring?
I brought Maw because she's hyper AP efficient. So that lets me get all of those regardless of what's happening. He declared Sand Deep. And so I knew that like attrition would be a main focus of the game. I knew time would be a pressure in the game. So I wanted something I could play like instantly. I think all of my decisions were fairly snappy. There were a couple times I just didn't think, but I knew that would be a main pressure point of the game, so I want something I was familiar with.
What do you think some of the key stuff was, that key moments?
Yeah, so key moments. There was an initial part of the first turn where he deployed behind a building, and I think that kind of set him behind the whole game. He had to like kind of get out from behind the building. He did take a tax model. He took the captain, which was obviously a counterpick to Maw.
Yeah.
Reduces damage from range. So I kind of like shot into stuff that like left that bubble and just insta murdered it. And then everything else, I just focused on scoring. Roosters are 3 AP. Gracie is 5 AP. So you're going to go ahead and just super hyper outvalue your opponent just doing that stuff. And I kind of just audible to the attrition plan of, oh, I have more AP than you. So I'm just going to do this, even with him something like win game in every turn. Because the second they left that bubble, I just killed them instantly. So,
yeah, and it I have not played against Sandeep, but I'm hearing a lot of good stuff about him. I mean, what was kind of, had you experienced a Sandeep match before?
Yeah, I've played against Sandeep a few times. There's a guy in our shop who plays him semi regularly, Gavin. I've played a lot of games against him. Usually we'll like take an afternoon and just like try and play it perfectly. And we ignore time.
Right.
But we just take note that like time will always be a consideration. If you sit down against Sandy, plan to win on turn three of the game and on turn three, always score on turn two, always score all your points on turn three. That's the only reason I got 6 points, was because I was like, okay, Sandy, we're not getting past turn three. His big thing, and I think this is something a lot of people need to focus on, is his poison gammon. Basically do so much micro damage that it just gets really overwhelming really quick. Jesse didn't get really much of an opportunity to take that at his advantage because he had to summon them in. The biggest things I think that happened were like the table was just kind of awkward. It had this huge like area in the middle that was like this like basically a level out of Mario Kart. It was like the giant like square with all the other buildings connected to it and stuff. And it was really cool, but like I could just keep him in a corner from getting up into that building.
Right, right. All right, Daniel, now you played Matthew McGill, who's was on the car ride down for the Capital City group here, and it was a close win, 5-4. What was your approach to the pool?
So anytime I see Planet Explosives, my mind immediately goes to Dreamer, and that's almost always my pick. I might not consider it if they're taking Guild or something and they can take the Jury against me. It's really bad for his summons because he does, I think it's like 2 damage to buried models and 1 damage to summoned models. When he activates. So Dreamer, I took the main 2 picks I took outside of the normal stuff were Widow Weaver and Coppelius. Widow Weaver can, as a bonus action, no flip, she can drop out a web marker, and then at the beginning of her next activation, she can place into base contact with the web marker within 6, or within 12, excuse me. So she moves around really fast and basically is just a scheme runner. You just put 2 bombs on her, let her go, let her score some breakthrough, which wasn't in that pool, but Search of the Ruins was, which I ended up taking. That was easy points with her. Coppelius, his move 7 with Agile, also great for getting through and scoring Search. But he also has an aura with an aura 3 and a, I believe it's a mask trigger. You can remove enemy scheme markers within 3 and place your own scheme markers in base contact with it. He's playing Colette, so I knew he was going to go for the scheme marker schemes. And I thought, you know, especially if he takes Harness the Ley Line, this is going to be really, really good against it because I could place, you know, pick up his markers and put 2 of mine or 1 of mine in base contact with his and score it myself.
Colette has a lot of removal abilities as well. Did that concern you or impact what you picked?
No, because I felt like I had more ability to take her, like kill her stuff than she did mine. So I felt like I have the models that can do the killing to kill. I just need to take out a couple key models to deny his denial in a weird way of speaking. But I wasn't too concerned about it. I definitely got ahead early that game and totally got overconfident. And he brought it back and almost won or almost tied, rather. I thought I was going to, you know, put up like 7-3 and win. And he scored a lot of points I didn't expect at the end. And I did not score as many as I thought I would.
So out of curiosity, like what was your miss on that? So how did he sneak up on you that way?
Colette burying things. Cause I took out flank. He denied the second point about flank, by burying my, I think it was my Widow Weaver, on 1 flank. And then he, the Corphy Duet was a really good scheme runner, which he didn't use it to attack me at all, which I was worried about it the whole game, and I was kind of keeping my distance from it. And then it just ran through and scored, you know, 2 or 3 points for him by splitting and rejoining and splitting and rejoining.
The threat that the Duet has is, believe it or not, part of the reason it's a great scheme runner for exactly how you reacted to it, which is, you know, most scheme runners, you just go, all right, I'm just going to wipe that off the board. The Duet is like, oh, you want to fight? That sounds good, too. I won't score this turn and I'll just wipe you off the board. So and I think that I don't think that's talked enough that I think that smart Arcanist players, which is a hard phrase for me to say, they use that Duet for exactly what Matthew did. So that's interesting. So key moments for you, Daniel, what do you think made the difference, allowed you to at least feel like you had the game in the bag and eventually eke it out?
So initially he had buried, like, he buried Chompy twice, which I think was a really bad look, especially since he took Search of the Ruins and he took another scheme marker. He took Harness the Ley Line and Search the Ruins. That's what he took. And if you bury Chompy, he can deploy near one of my scheme markers, which I'm putting out, or he can unbury in my deployment zone. And both of his, it's wedge deployment, so I can basically walk from my deployment zone to the halfway line for Harness if it's not on near one of the corners, or I can, you know, pick up a Search marker pretty easily. He's got Trail of Gore, excuse me, as a bonus action. So I can move 12 inches, and then within 3 of that, I can pick up a scheme marker with Trail of Gore, which is huge anti-scheme tech.
And, you know, you bury him, you give me all the options to put him wherever I want on the board.
He gave you, inadvertently gave you a ton of flexibility with Chompy.
Yeah, I was ecstatic when he did that. Yeah, just through activation control and some other stuff, he really put the screws to me late and ended up forcing me to make some hard decisions, which I screwed up on and ended up denying me some points and scoring some of his own. He kind of dug himself in a hole and just really almost got himself out.
That's cool. Hats off to him, right?
Yeah. Great game. Great guy, too. I had a blast playing against him. He's very funny. He's a hilarious guy. I enjoyed it.
He's awful on the internet, but he's amazing.
Yeah, he's a good dude. He's a good dude.
I can totally see that. If you're like, he's very sarcastic. So if you're not.
Oh, yeah.
You can't pick up on that when you're like on some internet forum.
He never puts a slash S.
Well, and you compare that to John. John is exactly as he comes off on the internet in person.
Yeah, he's just. All
right. So, Nick, you played one of our Carolina locals, Damian Guy. And for those of you listening, you may have remember Damian was the Mattucket player against Daniel on the Battleground broadcast video. And Nick, you won 6-5. What did you you brought Dreamer, I guess, right?
Yeah.
What did Damian declare?
He brought Transmortis.
Oh, nice.
So Von Shook, yeah. Yeah, when I saw that, I knew it was just going to be a slug out, like. There's no way around it. You're just going to sit. You're both going to be in each other's face fighting each other. Because, like, Dreamer's about as tanky as they are. So, I picked Outflank and Hold Up. They're just super easy for that crew.
Yep.
Like, insanely. It's interesting because, like, Dreamer's one of the crews that really loves spreading out and wants you to do the same thing. But it didn't end up that way. He, focused one of the corners. The game was actually kind of weird because the first turn, he Black Jokered on putting the upgrade on Valedictorian. Ooh. So he couldn't give it fast. He couldn't, like, threaten me with it. So I was like, all right, I can just move around, do whatever. Yeah. The second turn, he started, like, trying to stop my outflank. But it was not easy for him to, like, keep up on scoring.
Yeah. Because
he took Harness and Search also. And you know, Dreamer has ways to get around that. And if you're like focused around in one area, it's easy to keep you like contained there.
So quick question for you, Nick, you mentioned, you know, obviously Dreamer likes to spread out, that I understand, but you also mentioned that Dreamer likes your opponent to spread out as well. Can you kind of explain to everybody what that means? Why does Dreamer like that?
He really likes it. Cause like, if you're individually fighting his models and like, They're still tanky. Almost all of them are like incorporeal or armor or something. But like, since you can individually fail those whip duels, like so I played all minions. I only played the minions. I didn't take any enforcers or henchmen and Dreamer. I only played Insidious Mantis, Stitched, and Daydreams.
Wow. Okay.
With Alps, I guess, as an option to summon. Cause my list was, 3 Insidious, 2 Stitched, 3 Daydreams. Cause I think they're just that much more efficient than everything else in the crew. The other stuff is sweet. I like it. It's cool, but yeah. So like, if you have like a 3 Insidious, they're really fast. If you try to go fight them, they make you feel whip duels and summon people next to you, and they keep healing themselves. It's like really bad for you to try to fight them individually, so you have to ball up and like hit pockets of them, because otherwise it's just not going to work out. Plus like the other thing, like with the 3 Insidious, they can just sit in the corner and use disembodied voices to eat focus off people, get them distracted. So they're always useful even when scheming. They can just sit there and do nothing and still affect the board anywhere they want.
So if someone's going up against Dreamer, I mean, is one of the things you're afraid of is getting, you know, kind of isolated and ganged up on? Is that an issue or a threat?
I don't think it is, because you have so much movement with the Daydreams that you can, because like what happened that game, I was like, moving up my left side, he was moving up his left side. So we're like on opposite sides of the board. And then the Daydreams lets you like, all right, he's going to do that. Well, I can kind of come in from the side and stop you from like stopping me.
So and now you've, I would assume you've played against Von Shook before, because you've got some Rezzer players up there. What's your take on him?
He is also one of the broken crews.
Okay.
It's like, because Valedictorian is such a threat that he can reach anyone on the board first turn. So you're like, all right, I can't bring any like scheme runner people, because he'll just eat them, turn them into a model. and then they have, they're so tanky, and they also draw a shit ton of cards.
Yeah, the card draw is insane.
It's they draw so much, and it's just like they're really tanky too. Armor and hard to wound on most of their models, so
always doing minimum minus one.
Yeah, it's like very difficult to actually like win in a straight up fight with them. You have to like do other stuff.
Undergraduates may be one of the best minions in the game.
They're really good.
Yeah. They're really, really good.
They're like equal to Insidious Madness and Dreamer. Like they're about as effective.
Yep.
Which is really effective.
Buyer Side is a pretty good ability.
Yeah.
pretty good. All right, Grace. Guys, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back from this break, we're going to talk about round two. It's a standard Reckoning round. We'll be right back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, so we got three wins, one for each of you. Let's head into round two. Now, it's a standard Reckoning round with Breakthrough, Claim Jump, Vendetta, Take Prisoner, and Power Ritual. Now, Oliver, you played a local Neverborn player, Sam Newman, and had a huge win of 8-1. First, let's find out what you brought and what Sam brought.
Yeah, so I brought Neverborn, I brought Somer. He's the best master in Bayou, in my opinion. I thought he was damn good before this game, and then after the game I was like, oh, he's just the best. Sam taught me something that I didn't realize worked the way I thought it did. He brought Zoraida. He had a really cool list, actually, so I want to kind of shout that out. He was bringing a Black Blood Shaman and a Gotru Boker, so he could stab his Black Blood Shaman, drop a corpse, eat the corpse, focus pulse everybody, and then if you do not kill her in her deployment before the start of turn two, she summons a greater demon, whatever the hell they're called. Nephilim, greater Nephilim, what are they called?
Mature Nephilim.
Mature Nephilim.
That's it, yeah. Great. He summons a Bloodthirster, and then the Bloodthirster starts killing things. I got lucky, so obviously that didn't happen. But yeah.
So let's talk about your Somer list.
Yeah, so I think for Somer, you're almost always bringing a Spithog. I'm going to put that out there first. Because there's a lot of people who still don't believe in the Spithog.
Spithog's good.
Model. Yeah, I think it's one of the best models in the game. It's got stat 7 lore. It's got a weird thing that is not like anything else, where it just scoops everybody up in 6 inches and puts them in base-to-base with it, also known as now they're behind your enemy lines.
Yep.
And they will die. I usually bring at least one, good old boy, usually two. And Georgine Olaf, obviously. Lenny, obviously. They don't really need a lot of explanation. Old Cranky is exceptional, and I'm bringing him a lot more now because he lets you focus on Somer, and he lets you focus on Georgina Law for free because their bonus actions aren't actually that good.
Yep.
And then usually what you're doing is turn one, you're flying Skeeters into position to interact, and then you're summoning a Crier who can then see one of the Skeeters to interact. So for my missions, I took Cirxarones. I took Claim Jump and Take Prisoner. You have to think of Somer for scheming like Zoraida, who can also do other things. Because the Criers are so powerful at obeying. They're stat 7 obey with Bully. They're 6 points. So they can always obey their own guys for the most part. All they need is a 7, that's it. And then if they catch anyone who's an enemy who's cheaper than them, like they can just run right over them. So that's just something to keep in mind. I think Claim Jump's super easy for Lenny, because if you get near Lenny, he will kill you.
Yep.
If you don't kill Lenny, I'm going to win. So you have to get near Lenny. So it's just the tension
point. So Take Prisoner is not a normal pick, Oliver, for you in this case, that you generally prefer schemes where you don't have to depend on the opponent. So, but with Somer, that's a little bit different, isn't it?
Yeah. So Somer does not have a lot of movement. He really doesn't have an ability to get past the line of scrimmage. So that immediately cuts Breakthrough out of it. and immediately cuts Power Ritual out. So you're left with Vendetta, which I hate. I will never take Vendetta ever. So that means that I'm taking Claim Junk or Take Prisoner. So when I looked at this round, I was like, okay, these are the two missions I have to take because the rest are dog shit or I'm playing Zip to try and run after Breakthrough and Power Ritual. I don't like taking both. So Somer was the obvious pick because for Take Prisoner, I can always score the second point by killing his own guy with his own guys because Cryers are that powerful. And then Claim Jump is pretty easy with Lenny. So just because at the end of the day, like, you don't usually want to get near him. And if they do get near him, he can throw them away or you can cry or move them away. There's like a ton of options for getting people away from him in the list. It was a pretty interesting game. He started with the Groot Slaying and put his layers up and everything, did his Black Blood trick. And then he moved up McTavish. His list was McTavish, Groot Slaying, Black Blood Shaman, Doppelganger, and Gotru Boker, Zoraida, obviously. And I think that's it. It was a pretty small team. So for me, that means my Skeeters are highly valuable because they're really hard to kill. You usually walk focus with them on turn one while they're in position to interact your scheme. This game, they just focused. And then I think I did put a bully scheme marker down just to like make nonsense. But they're just going to fly into a person and then focus on the defense and be stat 7 on defense. And they're just like impossible to kill because you're usually min damaging them. So unless you're hitting them with a 3 stat, they're not going to die. But he walked him up and then I walked up with good old boys and I shot. So this is where the game gets really weird. So I focus on the shot because good old boys are broken because they have swagger. And then he's like, okay, cool. So you get a positive on your ricochet. I was like, what? And he's like, yeah. So the way the rules are nested, I forgot we were playing Infinity. The way the rules are nested, your focus carries over to the ricochet. And I was like, no, that's not how that works. That's cool that you think that. Like, that sounds mega broken, but no, there's no way it works that way. So then I go over to Jesse, and Jesse's like, yeah, it works that way.
Yeah, and for those listening, the ricochet is the trigger, right?
Yeah, the ricochet is a trigger. So they have a shotgun that's 8 inches. It's 2, 3, 3 blast. So if you trigger the blast on severe, I think it's 3 blast, 3 blast. But if you trigger the blast on severe, you're hitting bystander for 3 damage. And then you're ricocheting up to 3 inches away for 1, 2, or 4. So the fact that it's, you know, you can flip severe is just crazy. So he's a Black Blood Shaman behind a wall. I shoot McTavish. Splash the blast down and then ricochet. I can barely see her because he's a giant idiot. So there's a line. I ricochet onto him, flip, and I think I flipped a red Joker and then just 5 damage to Black Blood Shaman. Because, you know, better luck.
Disgusting.
Yeah. So, and then at that point, like, everybody's like, no, it definitely works that way. I'm like, there's no way. There's no way. And it just confirmed person after person after person. And that just makes Somer a whole nother bag of crazy.
Yeah.
Because now he doesn't need to get to turn 5 to beat you. He can table you turn 2 or 3 at most. And if you survive past that, he's summoning into waiting turn 5.
Well, and to clarify from my perspective, Oliver, Somer's not the problem, right? In the same way that I don't think Ma's the problem, I think that what needs some attention is focus as a condition. It's universal, and this is just my opinion. And it's my podcast, so I'm right.
That's a pretty good brand.
it's too easy to get. Not only is it just universal, you know, you can just concentrate, but focus is in a lot of places. So the efficiency is there, and I didn't used to think this, man, but the more I'm talking to people, the more games I'm watching and the more games I'm playing, it's, and I don't know what the answer is. I know Kyle on one of our episodes had an interesting idea, which is you get a positive to something, right? So you can either choose to get a positive to the attack or the damage. Thought that was an interesting solution, which doesn't make focus useless, but doesn't make it disgusting.
You just won. You just get one.
Or something. That's it. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
there probably has to be something. I do think that if you adjust focus, Somer is still hyper broken.
Well, he's still good. Exactly.
Yeah, it's just every single model in his crew outside of Manginesis, which are really good when they're really good. Mm-hmm. But that 5% or 10% doesn't show up often. Other than that, every single model in that crew does dumb shit. Like, they're stat 7 on almost all their attacks, or stat 6 on all their attacks, so they're above you. and then they're defense 6 on almost everything. Mm-hmm. So you're hard to hit them. And then random, like, good old boys are hard to wound, and they have a plus flip for every person near them. So you're like, oh, I'm going to go kill this old idiot. And he's like, haha, nope, not today. Like, it's just a bananas for. And then you're summoning the whole time. And if anybody does get out of position and goes to die, you can just blow them up.
Yep. Yep. And the fact that, you know, his low level summon there is insignificant. You know, so you have no trouble bringing him into breakthrough, or I'm sorry, into reckoning, right?
Into reckoning, and yeah. I summon them usually I'll always summon criers or good old boys,
right?
And then if I have a 13 or 14, which I always will, because I bring like 8 stones in Somer, so I'm always cycling for a turn.
Well, and the card draw is pretty good in Somer too.
Yeah, and then you have like the bigger hat than you, and then, so you're just making them discard their pass tokens. And then you have their positive flip, or the cheat off the top, which you just always do if you don't care. So you just save your good cards for when they matter. It's just like an insane. He's our best master. It's like not even close. Ma is shit compared to Summer. Like, and I will say that. I'm making a like deep dive with you on Ma. But after the ricochet trick, like, I can literally just say, I'm going to reach out and touch your big model because your idiot's standing next to him. Take 7. You do not get to interact. You do not get to pass go. You will flip no cards. Here's your 7 damage, yep. And I'm going to shoot you with my next good old boy. Like, what the hell?
No, it is definitely good. Talk to me a little bit. I mean, we talked a little bit about what happened with the ricochet, but 8-1 is still a huge thing. So was there a bunch of denial? Or?
No, I just did that like 3 times.
Okay.
And then I killed like his whole team. So, and then Zoraida was like, oh, I'm going to come out. And then I shot her a bunch. And then he's like, yeah, I think we're about at that. He's like, what was your other mission? I was like, oh, take prisoner. And I was like, I just summoned a second prior. He's like, oh. He's like, well, do you have anything outside of that? And I was like, yeah, I can just push my Spithog and then lure you twice for stat 7.
Yep.
He's like, okay, I think we're pretty done here. So it was like he had, I think, just Zoraida and the doppelganger left, if memory serves. And then the Grootslang was at like 2 HP. So it was like basically destined to die. I will say, though, my opponent was amazing. I really like Sam. He's a super
cool great dude. Guy.
I've known him for a long time, and I always thought he was the other guy in his profile picture. So he's like, yeah, yeah, we've talked a bunch. I'm like, I don't know who you are, dude. That's cool. Like, whatever. But, like, so the whole – and then he messaged me on Facebook. And I was like, oh, son of a bitch, it's that guy. And the whole time, I thought he was the other person's profile picture.
Yeah, so –
so I've known the guy for a year.
Isn't that funny? His Facebook profile is him and his significant other, and I never thought about that. If you've never met Sam, you're so not quite funny. Sure which is which. So,
oh, yeah. That's I was funny. Just like, oh, it, like, yeah, it's so funny. Yeah. But he's super gracious. You know, didn't get upset or anything the whole game. I mean, he argued for me. I mean, he could have very easily been like, yep, ricochet doesn't work that yep. way.
No, he's a clean player. And one of the things that Sam used to struggle with, which is the speed of play, he's made huge improvements on as well. The other thing that's great about Sam is if anytime we need some volunteer help here on the third floor, Sam is the first guy to jump on. So he often will run the chats in our live streams. He helped out a ton when we did the overview videos for Neverborn, which we're releasing here over the next 6 months. I'm a huge fan of him. But the big battle. So round 2, we have Daniel facing Nick. I want to start with you, Daniel. What did you bring and what was the reason for bringing it?
So I had talked around and I saw that Nick had taken Dreamer round 1. And I played Nick before. We played at the December GT. He took Shenlong and properly spanked me.
Was that before the game or at the game?
I don't know.
We won't get into that, Craig.
Okay.
he whipped me pretty good. I'm not ashamed to admit it. Nick's definitely a better player than I am. He had a bit of a rough game over in Charlotte, though.
Yeah.
I was pretty sure he's going to take Dreamer. He declared Neverborn. I declared Neverborn. And I thought to myself, I don't usually take Z in Reckoning. But I was like, I know Dreamer's group like pretty well. Like, I feel confident running Z here, because that's like, you know, her biggest asset is knowing the opponent's crew, in my opinion. So I was like, whatever, I'll run Z and we'll see how it goes. When I saw his list, I was surprised because it was all minions. Which at first glance, I was like, that's a horrible idea. And then I thought about it again, and I was like, this is actually brilliant.
he took almost all, he took Daydreams, three Daydreams, three Madness, and two Stitched. Daydreams aren't worth anything for Reckoning. Stitched have armor one, and they have ways to heal themselves. And Insidious Madness are incorporeal with Terrifying and have ways to heal themselves as well. So it's actually a very tanky crew. And I was like, gosh, Christ, this is actually going to be very difficult.
Well, and when you think about this into Reckoning, by facing an all minion crew, I mean, it might make that first and second Reckoning points doable, but man, good luck on the third and fourth point.
Yeah. But as far as my crew, I took, I don't want to say a standard Z crew for me, but kind of usual stuff. I took Vasilisa, who's, I think, like a busted model. She can summon me Stitched, which is very important for that third point, as you just mentioned, Craig, because that's going to get me my Gamble Your Life, which ignores all of Dreamer's defensive tech, which he has like Protected, Incorporeal, and Serene Countenance. Yeah. Tactical Action gets around all of that. He's only got seven wounds. And then I took the Hooded Rider for his he's just a nice model in general. He's very good to obey because of his greatsword. And he has Ruthless, which is one of two models in everyone that has that. And I'm playing against Dreamer. I'm going to see a lot of Terrifying. And then I took Bad Juju, a Gotra Bakor, and the First Mate were my last three.
Nice. So we kind of talked about it a couple segments ago, but it's a big deal to have as much knowledge of your opponent's crew as you do, Daniel. And I think that that gives you not only an advantage because, you know, Mama Z requires that, but just in general, it's one of the reasons that in the deep dives, I like to kind of cover counters and things like that for people, because I want those deep dives to be valuable, even if you don't play that master, because that intel can be huge. So, Nick, what was your take on Daniel's picks when you saw his crew for the first time?
I thought it was sweet.
Sweet for him, or sweet for you?
Well, I thought it was a sweet crew for him, like, because Oliver has Zreda also, and we played it a bunch a while ago, and then we stopped because I hate playing against Zreda. So
yeah, I'm kind of a bastard when I play too.
But he's playing in Bayou, and so I hadn't seen like something like this in Neverborn. It was right.
You don't normally see the Hooded Rider.
Yeah, well, I really like that with Zreda. That's really sweet. That's a good idea to just like keep hitting people and doing a ton of damage. It like turns her obeys are already like crazy, but like it lets you have a model in your crew that's like great to obey like when you need it. Yeah, so I thought it was sweet. Yeah, again, I took the same list. It was funny when we were like building our crews, like he like took the upgrades out, and I'm like, oh yeah, Neverborn have upgrades too. So I pulled
out, right.
Yeah, I was like, oh yeah, Ancient Fat exists. So I like took an upgrade this game. I didn't think I'd need as many stones for summoning prevention. Because like he mentioned, like you could summon Stitch and get around Dreamer stuff. But yeah, so the same crew I took first round works Reckoning too. Mm-hmm. Insidious can take focus on people, get them distracted. The whole crew's tanky. You just resummon them if they die.
Yeah.
Doesn't really matter in Reckoning as much as long as you outscore your opponent, which I didn't do.
So, yeah, right. So, Daniel, yeah. What do you think was kind of the key moments that decided the game?
It's rough.
Nick,
I should talk about this because
if you want to, I don't want to rag on you too much.
Oh, jeez. Right.
Yeah. So, like, I misremembered Take Prisoner. I took a Take Prisoner, and I took what was the other one? Vendetta. Yeah, Vendetta.
Yep.
That was great. So, since I misremembered Take Prisoner, I like took it on Bad Juju. He's a henchman. And you can't do that. And we're in the middle of the game. We're like, oh shit, I can't actually score this. And we just kept going.
So in general, Nick, do you find the game harder when you're not playing for two schemes and only playing for one?
It is a little bit harder. It makes it a fair fight against Dreamer. It's it kind of was actually
your own version of comp.
Yeah. So like what would describe this game is like, we like misread some rules and I like just misread like lots of stuff.
Well, and that's going to happen, Nick. That's part of the danger of bringing something you're so new to, right?
Well, it wasn't the crew. It was just like I misread that. I misremembered Reckoning. You can't score 2 points off Enforcers. I thought it's only henchmen and masters that give you extra. So it's like, oh, I'm fine on this round, but it wasn't. And then like there's other rule stuff. Like he, I think Daniel, like you had obeyed one of my stitch to use his tactical on Dreamer, but you can't do that because it's enemy only. Mm-hmm. But it just happens, so we just let it through. It's whatever. And then later in the game, I actually realized this after the game, I was using a scatter to push people around and like push bad juju around because like I actually took take prisoner on him, so I spent a bunch of actions to like do stuff. But then later I realized he's got planned routes. You can't push him around. Yeah, stuff like that. So there's just like all sorts of stuff like that this game.
So it ended up being a little bit, rules-wise, a little sloppy for both of you.
It was a little sloppy, but it was still a pretty sweet game, honestly.
It was a good game. And it was also, we only ended up going to turn four as well, which is worth mentioning. I mean, that's kind of a fact of playing Z and Dreamer on the same table. Those are very intensive, long masters.
I'm actually really glad you didn't also bring Dreamer. I think you remember you saying that. You're like, I didn't want to do that because it just doesn't sound fun. I'm like, yeah, that would have been awful if we're just sitting at each other, just trying to beat each other down. Like,
that's a crazy mirror match. So, all right, guys, well, let's take another quick break and let's talk about the final round where these guys ended up solidifying their positions. And it's going to be a flank turf war round. We'll be right back. Howdy friends, Greg here. Nothing makes Malifaux easier than having the right tools. Here at the Third Floor, we love all the licensed Malifaux goodies from Custom Meeple. Not only are they helping support this podcast, they sell custom-made weird licensed tokens and terrain. They sell it all. Crew boxes, terrain, markers, tokens, and even a 3x3 full Malifaux board. Custom Meeple sells a complete M3E token set covering every marker and token you need to play. Custom Meeple are the source for the official accessories for Malifaux. Everything is designed by hand and authorized by Weird Games. Check them out at CustomMeeple.com. That's with one M. Or follow the link in the show notes. Up your Malifaux game and be sure to tell them Craig from the Third Floor sent you. If you use the promo code Third Floor Friend, all one word, THIRDFLOORFRIEND, you'll get a 5% discount and help support the podcast. It's valid on everything except retail products and playmats. All right, so let's talk about the final round. Round three, a flank turf war. We've got deliver a message, power ritual, dig their graves, detonate the charges, and assassinate. So, Nick, you're going into this 1-1. Obviously, you need a nice win in order to have a chance to make podium. You played a good buddy of mine, Marcus Moore, and Marcus was playing Bayou, I assume?
Yes.
All right. So, and you have a little experience playing against Bayou, so that's good. A little bit. So, what did you bring, and what did he bring?
So, again, I brought the same crew, bunch of minions. And what he brought, he actually, it was really funny because I looked at him again and like smiled because he brought Wong and he brought like the Pigapult cheese list where you just like
I put faced bombs it before.
People. Yeah. Put bombs at people, launch them at you. But I was like, oh, he's playing Pigapult. I'm just going to spread my mauls out.
Yep.
Yeah. It was a funny game. It's like, cause I took, Power Ritual, and what was the other one? Dig their graves. You just like spread out and I put Dreamer all the way in the back. He doesn't actually have to do anything. You just summon a model every turn and then that's still good enough. But like he killed Chompy turn two. He like focused him down and I was like, okay, he spent all his actions on that. And then the rest of my crew went all over the board and did all this stuff.
Yeah, so it was an 8-2 win. I mean, what do you attribute to the differential? Was there some specific things that you were denying on his part? That
he wasn't trying super hard to score turf war. I think he decided that he was going to fight, just try to like hope I pack up some and like kill a bunch of people, which he did because he killed a Stitch and a J Dream that are near Chompy. I was like put them near it to maybe make him attack that. And he did. And I just like resummoned him later.
Right. But
he still killed Chompy, which is pretty big. But yep. So he was also doing Power Ritual because, you know, Swonk and teleport schemes places. But he had like, he had a lot of trouble leaving his deployment because there's like a lot of severe terrain in front of him. And like he deployed there so he'd be in range of like a bunch of people with a pick a bolt because I was the attacker. So he got to see where some stuff was. So the points he scored, because he had deliver message and he had power ritual. I was moving Dreamer up later in the game because it's like he can help me score Dig Their Graves since mm-hmm. he's got three actions to help and teleport people in. And he just like had a dude near him to go deliver. I didn't think he had it, so it just happened.
Yep.
The other point he did score Power Ritual because it's easy for Wong.
It's like his only feature.
Yeah, it's like the best part of him, really. But yeah. Otherwise, like. It's fortunately it's Wong's crew, so all his smalls have weak stats, and Dreamer, you're just like slowly making everything better and worse for your opponent, so you just can't overcome it at all.
Yep.
Like he's basically hoping I would pack up all my models and I didn't know what the Pigapult did, and he would just like kill them all.
Yeah, that Pigapult, if you don't know what's coming, it's like devastating. You're gonna lose the
destroy
game,
you.
Right? Yeah. I mean, I think the first time I have scooped against somebody in years was against a list very similar to that. It was Pigapult with Somer. And I didn't quite know what it did. And I had McMorning. So everybody was nice and bunched up, you know, turn one for him. Yeah. And, you know, he wiped half my crew by, you know, the fourth activation in turn one.
Yeah, but, it's just pocket sand.
Yeah, but once you know what's going on there,
never losing to it again.
Yeah, you're not going to lose to it again. So it can be it can be a little bit of a trap, I think, for the Bayou player as well. So Daniel, you played a local of ours, Michael Roper. Was Michael playing Rezzers?
I believe he was playing Rezzers, yes.
Okay. And you ended up winning 5-4. What did you bring and what did he bring?
I took Nekoma here.
Nice.
Which was a questionable decision. So I played against him in Turf War matches before, and he takes Daw. He did as Outcast, but he can also do that as Rezzers, which he did. And if I had thought about that for a second, I might have not taken Nekoma. But she's kind of my comfort pick in general, but also especially in Turf War. I think she does really well into it. My strategy is I've got a bunch of play sport bonus actions and then move six with flight. I'm just going to flip my markers, get in your face in your own quadrant early on, and then just like you'll obliterate my crew, but you didn't get across the table. You didn't score any points. And I got, you know, most of my points, you know, I got 2 or 3 from the scheme and hopefully 2 to 4 from the scheme, 2 to 3 from the strategy and 2 to 4 from the schemes.
Right. And the fight's happening on his side. So you're flipping his markers back, which means he has to waste AB to flip them back over again.
Exactly.
Whereas if he's killing your models, it's not flipping any of your markers. So that's a good strategy.
Right. I'm basically just throwing all my models into a blender and saying, here, have them. I don't care. I got my points, you know, try and do something about it.
It's funny you say that, Daniel, because that's and I think everybody will agree. It's something that's cool about Malifaux compared to other mini games, because usually, you know, I'm going to throw my stuff into a blender as a recipe for disaster in almost every other mini game. Yeah. But I love the fact that Malifaux that, you know, that can be the strategy and it can win you games. It's part of why you know, I harp about the depth I see in Malifaux from a gameplay perspective compared to others.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. One thing I will say that I almost completely screwed up. They had Assassinate in the pool, and they had Deliver a Message. I knew Jackdaw was going to be near me and in my face.
Yep.
So I was like, those are both good takes. And I felt confident about Assassinate. I was like, I have so much ping damage with Black Blood. Like, you know, I know he heals some, but it can't be that bad. It was that bad. I was really glad I didn't take an Assassinate.
Oops and
oopsie. Yeah, that's... Because I had Hayreddin and I had the Blackblood Shaman, who both can Blackblood Pustule out of activation. And then I think Hayreddin, I don't know if the Shaman has it or not. Hayreddin has a repeat trigger on it.
Yep.
So that's like, you know, 2 to 4 damage out of activation on him that he can't really get around without using stones. So I thought about taking it. I was really glad I didn't.
because I did try that initially, and that was a huge mistake. And I kind of like on turn two and three, I had to like just abandon ship. And I was like, I'm playing this completely wrong. I need to get out of here and just score my points and try and deny as many as I can.
Good for you.
Just stuck to my strategy at the beginning, just flip my markers, get in his face early, and try and take him out in his own quadrant, I would have done a lot better. And I don't think it would have been as close of a game. But because I got greedy and I was like, I probably killed Jackdaw, whatever. That really, really made it a tight game the whole way through.
Well, and that dog crew is a very unique crew in general. That keyword is very unique. And the first time you face it, I don't care how many times you've read the cards, you're not going to realize what Daw does. Now, granted, similar to the Pinkapult, that once you play it once, you kind of get, okay, you know, you can see what Daw does. But it's one of those keywords that you have to see on the table, both as a Daw player and playing against Daw, to really understand what the hell is going on. Your ability, though, to pivot, Daniel, is huge. I've always considered you one of the strongest player in our meta, and your ability to say, recognize A, what was happening, B, it was going to lose you the game, and C, I need to change things. And granted, Nekoma gives you some of that flexibility, is very, very smart. So a strong win. And you know, Michael is a very good Daw player. So that's, you know, winning against his Daw, whether he's playing it as Outcast or Rezzer is no small thing. So that locked you into second place. Oliver, now you play Jeremy, who is a good buddy of mine, literally one of the best people ever to play against, because
he's so fun.
He's a good player. He's a clean player. He's a nice dude. I gotta somehow get him to stop playing Arcanist, but that's a whole nother thing. But
I don't know if we can. I think it's just polluted his blood.
I told him Arcanists are Duke Blue. He's a big Carolina fan. I told him they're Duke Blue. You can't play that.
Good call. Yeah, he's a fellow Tar Heel, which in no way impacts the fact that I love the guy. So you had a nice win, though, 4-2. Again, you know, Jeremy, he's only been playing, for less than a year now. But he plays a lot better than somebody who's only been playing for a year. And beating him in any match 4-2 is a big deal. So walk me through what you brought and what he brought.
So this was a rematch. We played at the last North Carolina game. And, like, I think that was back in November, maybe October. I can't remember. But regardless, I could even see, like, his growth as a player in the last 2 months.
Yeah.
So I always love playing against him. He is a blast. He's like so jovial and like
loves the game.
He's just like a joyous human. Yep. And just so I can't speak on like his character enough. As for his actual competency in play, he's gotten very tight. His counter picks are very strong. He immediately saddled up captain. And he's like, well, I'm already paying 10 points. So he went for Tony. I assume he kind of went in knowing that I like to shoot people out of their deployment. I don't know if I'm known for that or what, I don't know. But I picked Somer because he's broken. And the reason that he was favored in this is because we had both Dig Their Graves and Detonate the Charges. Those are two of the hardest missions to score for anyone who's not Somer, because it's just wonky and awkward. For Somer, they're extremely easy because the criers just to interact with anybody, and then they let you put down a scheme, and regardless of whether you're in melee or whether or not you're insignificant, so you can almost never not score it, basically. Criers are guild warriors times 10, so just keep that in mind, guild players who are upset about their faction. One day you guys may be good. But he brought captain, he brought the lawyer chick, I don't remember her name, he brought Fitzsimmons. And he clustered those three together, which was really fucking obnoxious.
Yeah, it's brutal. The overlap there is brutal.
It was really annoying. So my focus, I basically opened up the game, moved a Skeeter off to the left, moved another one into position, summoned some stuff, and then dropped my Crier into the game and interacted with all the... It was like a Biogremlin and two Skeeters that were like touching three of the markers, and the Gremlin could see all of them. So if at any point he tried to like move towards one of them, I could just obey and then flip them. And if he killed that target, they're insignificant. So yep. I wouldn't flip it back because, you know, we're all playing fair Malifaux, you know? So
Big points of the game. He had those three bundled up. I just kept shooting into them with good old boys, doing the ricochet trick, doing the blast, and then bouncing the three. And just so I just kept chip damaging them down. I was still focused doing it because even though I was only doing one damage per attack, it almost guaranteed I'd beat them. I'm stat 7, I want to say, on ranged good old boys. I mean, they need it, right? Like, they just need stat 7 on their guns. So shot into them and then just slowly chipped them down. And then the weird thing that happened, he tried to go for old Cranky really early, which is smart.
I was about to say, that's not a big priority.
Yeah, you should kill the old man. He's really good. He makes all of my other models better. He lets me discard my bad cards for focus. So he went after him, and I had to abandon one of my points to save him with a Skeeter. So I, like, moved, charged, and then attacked him with a Skeeter, and then did the You're Coming With Me to, like, pull him behind a wall. And it, like, I felt like a god. I was like, yes. And then he killed him anyways. But it took, like, an extra turn and a half, and it made him get a Gunslinger and Mouse out of position. So I was able to shoot into them, ricochet trick, and then he shot, killed Cranky on the first activation for the Gunslinger. I discarded a card, and then Pig Eating Grin for a stat 8. Georgie Noloff gets out of activation under Lenny, so he gets 3, plus 3 to his stat.
Yep.
And then used my focus, of course. So then the Gunslinger had used his first AP to shoot Cranky. I crack back in the middle of his activation, kill him, and then kill Mouse before Mouse activates. And I, like, that just collapsed his right flank, and then I just pushed all my forces into the awful miasma in the center. Killed the lawyer chick and went from there.
Yeah, how much of a factor was Tony in the game, or did you just ignore her?
She was definitely a factor. I had to mitigate. I kept kind of like enticing her with targets over towards the right with Cranky and a couple others, and he kept trying to drag people into her. But there was this really conveniently placed lake and very conveniently placed giant, like, rock cliff. And so I just kept shuffling my team around the rock cliff to make her on the other side of it, just to make it awkward. I knew it would be a shorter game, just because of, like, how fast we were playing or whatever. So I just kind of, like, tried to keep her busy, basically. I threw a Skeeter into her at one point with focus, and then she took, like, 2 attacks to kill it.
Right.
Maybe 3. I think it was just 2. I think he, like, missed on one, and then the second one punched it. But either way, it, like, ate up a lot of its activations. And then with Mouse and the Gunslinger, who are right next to her, just, like, auto-dying before they activated, I was able to out-activate him for most of the game. And just keep him, basically, like, under activation. I think I killed a model before it activated at least once every turn, if not 2.
That's
on
huge.
Some of the turns. Yeah. So, and that's the benefit of Bayou, right? Is, like, sure, you have all your pass tokens, but that doesn't matter if I'm just killing your models before they activate.
Yeah, so you're maintaining AP dominance at that point. And one of the keys when you face Tony is accepting the fact that Tony's going to eat stuff. But what you're going to want to do is you want to dictate what that is. If you can say, I'm going to take. And this is all placement, right? I'm going to make sure that I'm the one that decides who she eats versus the Tony player. So well done on that, guys. Let's go ahead and take one last break. When we get back from this break, I've got 3 what I consider good Malifaux players on the pod. So I want to talk about a couple things. So I want to talk about kind of the current strategy pool, the 4 different strategies we have, and if there's anything that they're hoping for to see in Gaining Ground Season 1. And then I also want to talk about how many rounds we're getting in within the time constraints. So we'll be right back. Howdy, friends. Here on the 3rd floor, you'll find us playing Malifaux and other games on Mats by Mars. They are scratch-resistant, waterproof, wet erase Merkle compatible, and lighter than neoprene. These mats use a new material that almost eliminates any glare. Mats by Mars gives you over 40 designs to choose from. Pick a mat size, pick a design, then choose an overlay like the one for Marvel Crisis Protocol or Malifaux 3rd Edition Strats and Schemes. It's going to speed up your deployment and the placement of strategy and objective markers. Until the end of June 2020, you can use the new promo code 3rdfloor620 to get a 10% discount on your next order. In the notes, you can ask for the 3rd Floor Wars logo to be put on your mat for free. Again, use the promo code THIRDFLOOR620, that's THIRDFLOOR620, to get a 10% discount. All the details are in the show notes.
Hi there, this is Owen from the Nova Open, and I am a $5 patron of Third Floor Wars because I love supporting the whole Malifaux community. I want to help Craig and the whole Third Floor Wars team continue making the fantastic content that gets me through my daily commute. You should join me in supporting the show. Just pause this episode, head to patreon.com and search Third Floor Wars, or grab the link in the show notes. See you there.
I want to do a quick shout out for our all-time top patrons: Nick Westbrook, Craig Chuba, Stephen Morris, Kevin Smith, Sam Newman, James Hahn, Jeremy Peace, Ambrose Ingram, and Corin Solez. It's because of you guys and gals that we're able to do what we do. So guys, one of the things that, you know, we hear a lot of chatter about on Weird Place, it's a lot of chatter here in our local chats, is, you know, how many rounds are getting played. And to quote Cody, I think, in one of the previous podcasts, you know, if you're not playing five rounds, you're not playing Malifaux. You're playing a comped version of Malifaux. And so I want to talk about that. And Oliver, let's start with you. Like, what is your take right now? Like, so, for example, in your three games, what rounds did you finish on? Yeah,
so three in every game.
Three turns, right?
Mm-hmm. And then, I think that's going to happen 99% of the time. I mean, I've been pretty like open about my opinion that Malifaux is a three-turn game, even in tournaments. I think Cody's right that it is a different game than what they're designed to, but I think it's odd because it's clear that they also take that into consideration when they're designing crews, right? Like look at Sommer, look at Dreamer, right? Or look at any of the other summoners. It's very clear that time is a balancing factor when you look at how powerful their crews are. Dreamer is just an obscene master. If he lives five turns, you will never beat him. Very, very few exceptions, right? And so it's clear that they're like acknowledging it in some ways, but then they refuse to acknowledge it in others. And the community kind of has their head in the sand a little bit. It seems like people are starting to kind of open up and wake up to it. My biggest argument is that the logic that like the game will just get faster as we play more assumes the game is dead, because that means that there's no new players. You are always wanting an influx of 20 to 30% of your players to be brand new because you want to be proselytizing your game. You want to be encouraging people to play. And so if we're in a place where everybody plays so fast and speedy that we're all slamming five rounds in our tournament with 20 people, every single one of those people is a veteran and the game's dead because you have no new people.
Okay.
So I think that argument is, it assumes things that are bad. So we definitely want to mitigate that with new players. And I think that it's particularly egregious because you're seeing players who are well-versed. Like I was playing Sommer fast. Like, I mean, me and Jeremy played our game and we hit three turns. You know, I was playing Ma against Jesse and we talked through turn three, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, and you've seen me play Ma. Like I play Ma quick. You've seen me play Zip. Like I play Zip fast. Like I had my activation ready every single time we played at Nova. And you're not even getting close, right? The only time you're hitting turns four and five is like when the game crumples, like one person just auto falls over and you just crush their whole crew. That's why I play to kill your whole crew in the deployment, because you have 2 models to activate. You're not winning. Okay, you're done. Okay, cool. I'm going to scheme all my points. I'm going to scroll my stuff. Because if I alpha strike you and kill all your decisions, then I will actually get through turns four and five, which is going to increase my differential, and that's going to make you win. That's a problem. That should not be how the game is, or we need to openly acknowledge that it's an issue. Understand that you cannot change that unless you break the bones of the game and redesign a totally beast on top of it. We need to have three turns, scoring first turn, and then go from there. I think that that's the big thing I want out of season. Probably not one, because that takes a lot of you got to have a lot of humility to acknowledge you fucked up when you designed your game in regards to time.
Right.
And I don't think Weird's in a place for that, especially with their logistic errors. I don't know if anyone else saw the LVO post this weekend. Like, Jesus Christ, like, get a PR rep. Like, don't post shit like that on your page. It's disgraceful. It looks awful. It makes me embarrassed to play your fucking game. Don't post awful shit like that. Like, don't have arguments with other companies on Twitter. You're not Arby's. You're not Wendy's. Stop it. So I definitely don't think that's happening in season one, but it definitely needs to happen if we want the game to sustain. Because me telling a new player, hey, yeah, this game is a 5-turn game, and then them getting into a 5-hour game and then still not hitting turn 5, unless someone just crushes them, that's not, it's disingenuous, right? Like, we just need to acknowledge this is what we have.
So Daniel, out of curiosity, do you agree with Oliver that you would have to fundamentally break and redesign the game from the ground up to be able to play 5 rounds in 2.5 hours?
Consistently.
Consistently? Probably.
Okay.
There are certain, it depends on the crew too, as Oliver is saying.
Yeah, obviously. You know, there's a lot of variables, right?
When I played Nekoma, like, I'm expecting to either table you or you to table me. So that's, I've never had a game that didn't go to turn 5 with her. But, I felt like there's been an issue with the time for, since like last, like April, since end of open beta, really. It's just an inherently longer game. There's more models have more triggers. And just there's a lot more steps to do each thing you do when you play a game of Malifaux now, as opposed to second edition.
And that was going to be my big question, Daniel, as I haven't completely pinned down why. So 3, I think, streamlined the rule set from 2. So in your opinion, Daniel, like, why is that? Is it as simple as we just have more triggers, or what do you mean that takes more steps? I mean, what happened when we went to 3 that made the game longer?
I could probably answer that. Oh, you can keep going.
Well, I asked Daniel, so shut the hell up.
Yeah.
I'm curious.
Triggers is the first thing that comes to mind. I've thought about this before, and there's other stuff that I'm completely blanking on right now, to my embarrassment. But
you played a lot. Just sit back for a second, though, Daniel. You played a lot in 2. So, and you played Never Same Crews. So why is playing your Neverborn Crews now taking you longer than it did in 2?
It just, even the small models, like into second edition, there's a lot of small models. Like Kaladi had his puppets and stuff, that they just kind of did their thing, and they did one thing. They had a very specific role. There's no triggers, no like nonsense, no outside factors to consider. They just did this, done, 30-second activation. And it was like half your crew was like that, I felt, for most second edition.
There's a ton of throwaway activations, which we just in 3 every model does more. I think.
Yeah. And it makes the game very interesting, but yeah, at the same time, it takes time.
Yep. No, I agree. How about you, Nick? What do you think is the difference maker?
The crews, like models in general, do way less damage than they do in second edition. Mm-hmm. Like, because of that, there's more models on the table, so there's always more activations happening. Like, if you're not wiping your opponent, that means they have like 10 activations to get through. Like, a lot of Daniel's reasons make sense. And like, in addition, like, models are just not going off the table. They're still on there, still doing their stuff. And over a course of a game, that takes its toll for like time.
Yep.
Like, it just gets more and more complex as you go. Cause you're like, in the beginning, sure, you kind of know what you're doing. But as you're going through a game, you're like, oh, I need to score points. I need to do this. What's the best way to do that? And if you have to sit and think for a sec about that, there's not enough time for that. Like,
so here's kind of where I am. And this is tough for me. So I think that what your point, Nick, about the models are on the table longer, huge factor. 2, I think Daniel's point is big, which is, you don't have the throwaway activations. You've got every model matters more and impacts things more. And I think another factor too, which we've all kind of hinted at, but the schemes are more complex. Scoring is not as easy and straightforward as it used to be. Those are 3 things that I love about third edition. Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I love the fact that those 3 things were a part of this third edition. And I don't think until just recently I've started to use talk about head in the sand, Oliver. I don't think until recently that I've realized that this may not be just a, hey, this is still new to us situation, yep, that this is a permanent game state. Right. And where I struggle and where I'm glad I'm not Kyle and Matt is I don't know how to fix it. Because I don't think we want Malifaux to be a 4-hour skirmish game. Because that's not a real attractive slot in mini gaming, right? People go to skirmish games so that they're not slogging through 5-hour 40K games. But at the same time, man, I love the thing. So kind of where I, if I had to pick between the 3, right? So if I had to do the Sophie's choice, I think maybe making things die a little bit easier might be the answer. to get us going.
It takes a lot of work, though. So
I think
you have questions of like, okay, do we just go to fourth edition, or like, how do we change third edition as itself to be it? And I think that the only way you can do that reasonably is by adjusting gaining grounds. And I think that you just reduce the game to three turns. You do scoring turn one, and you just like, this is where we are, right? Like, this is a three turn game. So let's not just call it something else. Let's call it a three turn game. Let the first half season or whatever just be utter dog shit, right? Because you have Zip, who's going to be hyper broken. You have Zerato, who's going to be hyper broken. You have all these other various masters, Nekoma, a few others. But you have some masters who are going to be better, right? Like, Guild immediately becomes better.
Correct.
If you have that, right? Because they can counterpunch, they can hit early, they can score, they have dogs. Dogs are so good.
Yep.
Dogs are so good, Nick. I know you hate dogs, but dogs are amazing. They'd be amazing in a three-turn game, though, right? And so all of a sudden, you just acknowledge that that's what it is. You say, this is where we are. You let it sit for half a season. You let the people like Nick and me and Jamie over in Britain and Steve Bynum, and you let all these people just crunch through it for 6 months or a year because your company is no longer about to go underwater, right? You have the time now, and then you just rebalance the game to that, right? And I don't think it would take... it is significantly less adjustment turning the game from a five-turn game to a three-turn game than it is turning the game from a three-turn game to a five-turn game, right? Like, all of your broken summoners become a lot more reasonable in three turns. A lot of, like, everything just looks so much better from a thousand-foot view immediately, in my opinion. Right.
I got to say, Oliver, I've never thought about this before. And when you first mentioned it a couple of minutes ago, I was very skeptical, but you're making a pretty strong argument. And I think what will be key is that we make that, if that were to work, the only way it would work is we've got to make the whole game end on turn three, not just for tournaments, not just for anything. It's like this is a fundamental change to how we play the game. And everybody, whether it's casual or not, is playing a three turn game. I'm going to have to digest that, though, because
you have to design new schemes, right? Yeah. You wouldn't have the same strats. You wouldn't have the same schemes. But think about it. If those were just different, right? Because immediately the reason that you have a counterpunch to it, an immediate like negative reaction to it, is, man, I'd be really broke with the current schemes.
Right.
But would it be broken with the current models? Because the schemes and the strategies are interchangeable. We can throw all that shit out, keep the ones that are interesting, and then move on to the next ones. And it really, I think it really is a fundamentally and substantially easier way to fix the current game, because Malifaux is not a tournament game right now. That is the 110%. I do not want to go to a five-round Malifaux event fucking ever, because I do not want to just I don't want to do that. I can't play a five-round 40K tournament, and Malifaux is 40K in regards to time right now. Right. No one wants to admit it, but that is just what it is, right? Just be a pragmatist for a second. Like, we can't sit here and say, oh, well, this is what we want, so the results are definitely what we want. We have to say, well, what are the results we're getting out of the actual experiment, and how do we change the experience to get the results on the experiment? The experiment says X, so let's just try and plan around X.
Well, and the other thing, too, is at that point, you're setting some reasonable expectations, right?
Right. Because they're unreasonable right now. Like, how many times do I give demos and new people are like, oh, sweet, so it's a 25-on-25 Soulstone game. How long is this going to take? And it's like, I don't really – an hour and a half probably, just to be frank, like maybe two.
Yeah.
And they're like, but isn't this half the size of a normal game? Don't we only have like a third of the models? Like, what? How do you play a five-turn game? You don't. You cannot in 2 hours. And we've been timing ourselves. I don't know if, Nick, you've been doing it, but like, I've played games against Matt, and I've played games against John, I've played games against Gavin, where we literally slam a timer down and say, let's see how far we get. Are people doing that, right? Like, are people actually doing that and then getting on a weird place and making the commentary that you can definitely finish a five-turn game? And I don't know why Britain is always finishing their five turn rounds. I would assume that there is a substantial amount of models that are dead instantly, that they're forcing the alpha punch because they've been playing the beta longer, right? They have more players who probably solved that pattern that have said, okay, all I have to do is kill 2/3 of his models within the first 2 turns and we can finish 5 turns.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. But that's a very interesting point, Oliver, and one that I probably am going to turn to some other people in some other episodes to talk through it, because it's the first I've heard, and I think there's a lot of discussion to be had. I think this would be the simplest solution is a big thing that makes your argument interesting. So let's shift it a little bit, but it's going to be kind of tied together a little bit based off of what we just had. So Nick, of the four strategies, which one would you not cry if it went away?
Let's see. Probably Reckoning, just because it's kind of boring. It's like, the others are really interesting, but that one, like, you can, Reckoning is basically like a less complicated Turf War, and Turf War is more interesting to me. So,
Do you think Turf War is killy enough to be able to say we have a killy scheme?
Yeah.
Or killy strategy?
Yeah, I think so. Like, almost all of them really are, but like, Turf War is, yeah, you're killing each other, but in important places. It matters, like, where and what. You think about it more. Like,
so if you think about kind of the different keywords, the different things that, you know, make a keyword what it is, mobility, AP efficiencies, all, you know, all of these different types of things, is there a style of strategy that you think could make things interesting? And it's kind of a tough question, obviously, off the top of your head. But like, you know, we'd look at Turf War. Let's say Turf War is about, you know, positioning and kill threat, right? Damage threat and resilience, right? So we look at idols. Idols has a lot to do with your ability to shape your control hand.
Yeah.
So you can help with initiative. It has a lot to do with how you manage and use pass tokens. It also has to do with resiliency. Yeah. And plant explosive is all AP efficiency and, the downstream of having that AP efficiency. So what's potentially missing? Is there an aspects or, and maybe here's another way to phrase it, as somebody who's played two different factions.
Yeah.
Like, are there masters that don't hit the table that could hit the table if X was a factor in a strategy scoring?
Oh, I think so. Yeah. Like, actually, what I'd like to see, I don't see many miniatures game doing this, but like a strat that promotes like it has a list building restriction. So like a strategy where only minions can score it. Like if there's something like that, where only that, because right now, like, people don't really bring that many minions. They bring big models that like beat up other people really easily or do a lot more. And there's not really a reason to bring smaller guys unless they are really efficient, like with leaps and stuff. So I'd like to see a strat that encourages you to bring minions by specifically saying only minions can interact with this. So now you're like, well, how many do I bring versus how many big guys to like stop my opponent? Something like that. I would love to see something like that. Yeah.
I think it's a great idea. And there was a, in 2E, there was a strat called supply wagons, which in many ways was an awful, awful strategy, just terrible strategy, except for one aspect, which was you pushed a wagon based off of your base size.
Uh-huh.
So a 50 mil base pushed the wagon farther than a 40 mil, which pushed more than, a 30 mil. And what was interesting about it is it was a strategy that directly caused people to create lists they don't normally create. And I loved that about supply wagons. So I could have, you know, because in 2E, everybody pretty much had their standard list for just about everything, and you didn't vary it regardless of what the schemes and strategies were, except supply wagons. Supply wagons forced you to do it. So your concept, Nick, of a crew shaping strat, I think is very, very cool. How about you, Oliver? What is a strat you'd love to see disappear? And is there something that you think could add some spice to it?
So Nick said Reckoning, so I'm just going to be different so we get more information. I would actually like to see the Turf War change. I think that, again, like focusing on Alpha as a three-turn game, I would like to see Turf War turn into a I control more as opposed to I control a lot. So if it was a game that I was playing and I had to score turn one, if you just said you have to control more markers, like I have to control three as opposed to two, or I have to control two over one, like that would immediately make that game mode really fucking weird.
So you don't, like, you don't score if you tie.
Right. Right. Yeah. If you tie, nothing. Right. And so then all of a sudden the center point like matters way more. You've like weird like models that become like really good. Like you start favoring like those seven move guys who like fall over cause someone looks at them. Cause you're like, maybe I could just like move. And then turn two, I might be able to just like interact. Like, It makes some masters like really strangely strong. Like Zip all of a sudden becomes like more than just playable, because right now Zip's like fine. He's like good, but he's not great. His mobility doesn't like reward him in any way. But yeah, like a game that like hyper rewards mobility, right? Because all the game modes right now award mobility, because mobility is the best thing in the game. But there's not anything that says like, if you don't have 2-7 move models, or if you don't have like these hyper efficient models, you know, move 6, you know, cost Leaps. 3,
yep.
You know, then all of a sudden, you know, you're not getting anything crazy out of it. I would probably more like start scissoring out the schemes than the strategies.
Well, I'll tell you, the one thing I like about what you said is it would be interesting if the center marker mattered in turf war, because right now it's incidental, right? Like if it gets flipped, right, that's fine, and usually it's because your opponent screwed up. If you're getting that
no
marker,
one wants it.
Yeah, in the middle,
you really don't want to go after it. And I think adjusting that too to be like not kill, like you just have to go over there and change it. That all of a sudden gets like really crazy.
I agree. Like, how cool would it be if that, you know, because right now it's so easy to flip it off. But imagine imagine if that did not get impacted by killing, right? So killing was only for the quarter, and the middle it has to be interacted with to flip on or off.
Zone control matters so much more. Like holding actual people around the zone matters so much more. Like, oh, I've got a will-o-wisp sitting on the marker. Good luck with your 2-inch. Oh, you walked over to me? Get it distracted. Did you want to try and kill me before you try to interact with this, because now you're gonna like all of a sudden you have all these like weird random models. Like Willows are crazy anyways, right? No one plays them though, but for whatever reason. But yeah, I mean, like you have all these models that are just like weird and all of a sudden really good. So again, like what Nick was saying, right? Like I want more missions that are hyper list restrictive.
Yep.
You know, and the same thing can be said for the schemes, right? Like there are a few schemes that I just insta delete and just like move on.
Yep.
Because they don't do anything.
How about you, Daniels? Or and it's okay if you pick one that's already been picked. Is there a strategy you wouldn't miss?
I mean, I have to agree with Nick and Oliver. I think having Turf War and Reckoning both kill strategies. I would definitely get rid of one of them. I'd probably lean towards Reckoning. Mm-hmm. Yeah, nothing too interesting to say there. I think you could maybe do some stuff with Plant Explosives to make it a little more interesting. It's How's cool. Up? Just walk over and drop bombs. There's no enemy interaction. You do it and you score your points, and they do it and they score their points. One of my favorite things about near the end of second edition, the strategies they had then, is almost all of them were, I think, 3 out of 4 where it's the case where turn 1, I think you can both score it, but then turn 2, it's if you're tied, nobody scores. So it immediately, just via the strategies, you know, creates confrontation. Yeah. You want to be in your opponent's face and doing stuff against them and with them. That's what makes the game interesting. And I don't think Plant Explosives is all right, but it doesn't really have that aspect to it. You can just, you know, I can line up on my right half of the board. They can line up on their right half of the board. We both just go our opposite ways and, you know, get our strategy points. And it's not a fun way to play.
No, I agree. And I'll tell you, it's funny because the one thing I like about the strats and schemes in 3 is it pushes you out of your deployment zones. Like you have to get to the center or over the center to score a lot of these schemes and a lot of these strategies, which is something that I loved about the pools that we saw in 3. But one thing that I miss is what you're talking about, Daniel, is especially at the end of 2, it was, we're not both going to score. Either I'm scoring or you're scoring. And that changes everything, and it forces conflict. Yeah.
Worst
cause
in the game too, which is another big issue.
No, I agree. Okay, well, guys, I do appreciate it. Congratulations again. You know, it was a small local, but 14 players, and you guys, you know, made podium. So that's great. And I think that there's a decent chance that we're going to see all 3 of you come next fall for the Masters, based off of your current and future rankings. So, guys, does anybody have any plugs?
Nope.
Yeah. No. If you're in Virginia Beach, come out to Tower. That's where we play. Yeah. So
at some point, we will be doing an event. I'm currently trying to figure out what everyone in North Carolina is doing, so I can just like get a bus full of you guys up.
Well,
and 100% be down with that.
Yeah, we owe you some travel up there, man.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So we're trying to get you guys. We're trying to get guys from Hazak because we're kind of like nestled between the two of you. So I'm trying to like organize with Owen, and then also organize with Jesse and Blue and a couple others, like, figure out, like, what's the best date. So we're looking at sometime in mid-April, probably.
Great.
So pay attention to Southeastern Virginia Malifaux, which I guess is a plug. That's our Facebook group. So you guys are welcome to join that. Again, apologies for John and Matthew on a weird place. I'm going to just go ahead and formally apologize to the admins. And then the Bayou of Malifaux. So the Bayou of Malifaux is the Facebook group for Bayou. I guess I do also run that. I guess I do with books. So join that if you're looking for broken strats. Yeah. Thanks
for all right. Well, guys, thanks again for coming on. I'm sure that you guys will all be on again soon. And for those of you that stayed through the end, I appreciate you listening. Take care. Be sure to check out our shop on thirdfloorwars.com for the latest gaming apparel and gear. While you're there, check out how the USFO Tour is shaping up. How does your conference compare to the others in the United States? Where do you rank nationally? Get those models built, painted, and on the table so we can see you at the US Masters Invitational in October of 2020. Also, rate and write a review on this podcast for us. It really helps us find people almost as cool as you are. Thanks for listening. Howdy, friend. Craig here. Is this episode making you realize you need to buy some models? Gadzooks Gaming is my favorite online retailer because of their large selection, killer prices, and great customer service. Don't you hate buying an entire crew box when you only need one model? Gadzooks sells crew box models individually and saves you a ton of money. They even have free shipping to the US and Canada if you spend $100 or more. Swing by GadzooksGaming.com and make sure you tell them Craig from the Third Floor sent you. All the details are in the show notes. Howdy, folks. Craig here. Now, if you love gadgets as much as we do, you're going to love the new Third Floor Wars gadget bundle from Schooner Labs. Branded with the logo of your favorite podcast, it comes with two measuring multi-tools, a compass stepper for those tight and important movements, along with a compact dashboard to track your turn, strat, and scheme scoring, along with your soul stones and pass tokens. It is the perfect bundle for anyone who plays Malifaux or just wants to look cool while doing it. The link is in the show notes. Check them out and help support your favorite gaming podcast. All right, boys. So I didn't realize this since about two-thirds through. Oliver, your meter has not been going up and down, but I can hear you.
Oh, mine, it is on my side.
It's oh, it is?
Yeah, okay. I can see it go up and down.
It's thank going God. Up, so yeah. Hopefully.
I think one of the highlights of that game too was he's expecting Sober to like summon a dude into Tony, and I was like, nah, and I just like focused, charged, and like donkey punched the shit out of Fitzsimmons and just like insta killed him because I flipped a red joker.
Nice.
So lucky.
I was like, put a scheme down, charge, just like donkey punch, and then that got me my dig their graves point. Yeah. And he's like, what the fuck, dude? it was like my whole tournament was just like me playing mediocre and getting lucky.
Right. Fitzsimmons is an asshole. I hate that.
Yeah, he's a dick. And it's just like, ah! It's so funny. It's so funny.
All right, I'll bring us back.
Yeah, it sounds like fucking dog shit. Holy
it was God. Really funny,
Double
though.
Double Dreamer, like, yeah. Let's just go get a beer and flip a coin.
Yeah, that's probably what it would have been like. It would not have been fun. Like, yeah, thank you for playing enough. Something else.
Yeah, that's that was my first thought for that round, too, is probably to play Dreamer. But yeah. I was like, you know, I've been playing Z more and more recently.
Well, let's be fair, Daniel. The first thought for any Neverborn player is, oh, Dreamer would be good.
Yeah. Dreamer is
he's not as good in Reckoning and Turf War as he is in Plant and Corrupted Idol. Still very good, but not as good.
Yeah.
I think it's just the opportunity cost thing. It goes back to, like, you're just not going to be. Like, you're just almost never better off taking something else.
Yeah.
It's just that good, right? Because even into Reckoning, you have Carver to just like soak focus off people. So it's like, you attack Dreamer with a focus attack. I guess I'll just redirect to Carver and then
it depends
your focus
on,
before the attack.
Depends on how they're using it. Because I mean, it depends. Like, if you have a model, they can focus entirely within their own activation, right? They can just focus and use it. And you can push them 2 inches and make them take a damage, but you can't strip the condition.
Right.
So if you're playing against it smartly, it's not. You can get around Carver's anti-focus stuff, but
he's so crazy.
Yeah. Right. He's a very good model.
I'll bring us back.
I'll let you use that, Craig. You're allowed. You can use that break. My,
dude, you know, I use all of it.
Yeah, I figured.
He's got cash. A soulstone cash of his own. I don't think I actually answered your question. I'd get lost sometimes.
You're barely listenable, Nick.
Yeah. It's like, no. Oh yeah, let me talk about something else.
No, you're fine. It's my job as the host to direct things. So if I feel like I've asked something you haven't answered, I'll ask you again. Don't worry.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like a lot of podcasts where some of the guests just ramble about random stuff end up being the most interesting.
Well, it's part of it's part of what I like.
It's not overly excessive.
I agree. And it's one of the things like I want. That's why I try to turn this into a conversation as fast as possible.
Yeah.
And it's also why I don't, you know, say here's all the questions I'm going to ask. I'm not going to ask any other questions because I just want to kind of see where things go. And I've learned to control things as a host so I can, you know. If I think you're going in a place that nobody gives a shit about, I can bring it back. So, but that's not your job, Nick. That's mine.
Yeah.
Apparently, his charging cable is buried because I can hear.
I don't know if you've seen Oliver's house, but. No, he's a really clean person. Actually, my house is way dirtier.
Oh, like, dude, my house is clean until you get to the third floor. Yeah. Daniel's been up there, so you like walk up and it's just like, Greg's like order. That's cool.
You like clear off the table just to play a game. Just
it's so bad. It's so bad. Every weekend, I'm like, I'm going to clean up up here, and I end up doing something else.
Yeah. You have more inventory than most game stores up there.
Oh, it's embarrassing. And what's worse, Daniel, is as much inventory as you see, like, on the third floor, third. The other two-thirds is in the attic behind the door.
Is it also unbuilt, or?
Oh, most of it's sealed.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and shit I'll never do. Like, I'll never touch. And I don't know.
What a mess.
Nothing. We're just making fun of you.
Craig's trash pile. It's third floor.
Just models that you're never going to build.
Still
wrapped in plastic.
Daniel made the comment, I have more inventory than most game stores.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Yeah. All right, I will start us off on round two. Give me one second.